Bellingham for another extraordinary message on Gill Athletics Connections.
Well, welcome to the show. It's the goal to appreciate the coach, the ones that point people most. Every season needs a voice of reason, speaking the growth. Got a prep for you, carry the load. It's coffee to the soul for those of us who stay on the go. Proper handoff and stay in the zone. What you packing for the road? There's more than one way to the goal. Take notes, that's paying your toll. It ain't practice if your purpose ain't clear. It can't happen till you listen with both ears. You can't mentor without a mentor's years of experience. You can reinvent those years. Every plan's got a standard to live up to. And the price, sacrifice, can you give up you? It's a choice and a fight. Not a win or lose. It's not a ploy, but advice so y'all can make more moves. It's not about how to, it's all about why. You don't know till you know who you are inside. 6 million ways to tie, choose none. So we all cross the finish line, the work ain't done. So we learn from the experts. We all gotta put in the legwork. Gill Athletics is a network. It's all about connections put together for the profession. So every track coach could be a blessing.
All right, welcome back here to the Gill Athletics Connections podcast, the podcast that uplifts and honors coaches from around the world. We focus here domestically, of course, here in the U.S., but it's quite amazing when I look at the stats, listeners from Greece and Italy and the U.K. and Canada and Mexico, of course. It's just, it's quite humbling. So for all of our international listeners, so blessed that you would be here and really get to dive into some of the amazing coaches that we have here in the U.S. And speaking of that, let's get right into it. I'm really pumped for this one. Known him for a while, but don't know him, which is exciting. We get to learn together here. Help me welcome the head coach of Emporia State in beautiful Kansas, which I do know real. We're going to talk about Kansas. Trust me, I know some Kansas stuff. Help me welcome the wise, the wonderful Mr. Steve Blocker. Steve, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
How's it, you know, when you're listening, it's March, but we're recording this in February, and I call it my one year of jail time I did in Kansas, not too far from Emporia. How is it weather-wise right now in beautiful Kansas?
It's actually pretty nice. The next 3 days, I think, look pretty good. I think Wednesday gets up to near 70, and so today I think it's in the 60s, so I walked in this morning and it felt great.
I did 1 year in Chanute, Kansas. I was the head coach of Neosho County Community College.
Oh, yes.
And I love Kansas. Kansas is a great state, and there's some amazing places, Emporia and Wichita area and Kansas City, and there's a lot of towns in between. But, you know, Chanute is a very small, I don't know if town. What's smaller than a town? It's not a city. It's not a
township, maybe.
Maybe village. I don't know. It is so small. And the weather, we must have one of the worst winters. I was there for the 2001 season, so the winter going into 2001 was just, it was unbearable. I was ready. Wow. It was so bad. I chose to move to Indiana. That was a better weather spot for me. But
that
I didn't.
That was a good decision.
Yeah, exactly. But I did enjoy my location because, you know, right there in that southeast, we're close to Emporia and Wichita. We're close mm-hmm. to Joplin. Of course, Kansas City is just a little hike up north. So it was a great time there in Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, let's learn about your Kansas. I have no idea if you're from Kansas. What, Steve, where does, you know, at some point, assuming that you were an athlete, coaching in your mind switched. It went from something that was always done to you, Stephen, go run this, go lift this, etc., to, oh, wait a minute, like maybe I could be this could be a career for me possibly. Where does coaching begin for you?
Oh gosh, boy, that is a good question. I mean, I think as far as I can remember back, you know, to, of course, childhood, you know, I just remember sports. And so I just, you know, I remember, you know, playing football, I guess, was kind of the first sport, you know. I was a big 85 Bears fan, and, you know, so getting into football, I was right around that age. I was about 5-6 years old during that era. And so, so I think that kind of ushered me into sports. And then, I had a friend, you know, I started running track to get faster for football. And, a good buddy of mine who I can give the credit to, or I guess I could blame. I don't know. You know, my dad was a Marine. And so we moved around a little bit. And so my freshman year, I did long jump and triple jump out in a high school in California. And then we got stationed in Yuma, Arizona. And a friend of mine that I played wide receiver with said, "Hey, you know, you got to come run hurdles." And I thought, well, I don't want to do that, you know, but I did, you know, just because my buddy talked me into it, I guess. And so I had a great coach. He ran track at Wisconsin lacrosse, and he was a young high school coach. And so from that moment on, I kind of thought, hey, sports would be a part of my life. And slowly but surely, you know, track kind of overtook football as my first love, I guess. And so, and then just kind of, you know, just ascended through time. You know, I guess it really wasn't until I remember my fifth year of eligibility at Northern Iowa, my last season. You know, I thought I was going to be a strength coach. That was what I really wanted to do. And, had some good influences there at UNI. And, but then I think, you know, that last year, I just remember thinking, boy, I really like track. You know, I think I want to stick with this. And so from that moment on, I wanted to be a collegiate track and field coach. So
now, first of all, shout out to that friend. As a huge fan of the hurdles, I love that they're like, you should try the hurdles. I love how we have kind of alternate views. You were like, I don't know, I kind of like running on the straight and just jumping.
Right.
hurdles were introduced to me, so I was a kind of a half miler, and our practices were so bad. And what I mean by that is literally every day we did our events. That was every day. I mean, this was, you know, this is a few years before you. So this is before YouTube and books and videos and caring where I was in the little town of Alabama. So I saw the hurdlers, and all they did was the 110 hurdles and the 300 hurdles, and they were done for the day. And I was like, well, I that sounds a lot better than doing the 4x8, the 8, the mile, the 4x4, and typically the 2 mile every day. So I love this friend. Shout out. Do you remember his name?
His name was Jeff Weiss.
Nice. Jeff, I don't know if you're listening, man, but as a big fan of the hurdles, I always love people that recruit people into the hurdles. So I love that.
Yeah.
Tell me about, your dad was a Marine, quite interesting. So I knew California was going to come up, big Marine base out there, of course. What did you said you had a coach from University of Wisconsin lacrosse that was in Yuma, Arizona.
Correct.
So I love that you had someone from the Midwest come all the way out there. First of all, we love shouting out coaches' names. Do you remember his name?
Tom Spanton.
What was it about his style that your face kind of lit up a little bit when you talked about him?
Yeah, he was. I mean, so my teammate Jeff that talked me into running the hurdles. And all I remember, my first memory after that was I would go to practice in Yuma, and it was hot, and we had a dirt track, and I hated practice. Like, you know, I went from long jump, triple jump in Southern California to, you know, Yuma, Arizona in March,
desert,
like 90 degrees, you know, and I'm just running all these track workouts. All of a sudden I'm thinking, this is misery. But Tom, you know, he was probably, oh golly, he was maybe late 20s, you know, when he was coaching, and, you know, he would run with us. And he had a teammate that coached our sprinter. His name was Brad Chamberlain. And they would just jump in there and run with us. And Tom was a 400 hurdler. And so I think, his youth, you know, and the fact that they would jump in and run, and they made it fun, you know, and Tom was, I think his personality just really clicked with me. You know, he was kind of a sarcastic guy, you know, so you could laugh at yourself, so to speak, cause we were all learning. And he just made it really fun, and he was just a heck of a coach. And for some reason, you know, I think I go back and look at my first race ever, I fell. And we're at a meet in Lake Havasu, and, you know, I just remember hearing the crowd kind of give that, oh, you know, kind of thing, and got back up and finished. And, you know, fast forward, by the end of that year, I'd qualified for the state meet, and that was just Tom, you know, he was a great coach. And so he made it fun, and I went from hating it to loving it. So,
wow. I love that story, because what you just did there is encapsulate the power of the positivity of a coach, the positive impact a coach makes on young kids. Because both of y'all, especially after the first fall, not that your first race, it's very rare, right, when the first race goes perfect, and you're like, oh man, I ran my first race and I ran 14:20. And it's like, well, every other hurdler goes, well, screw you, man, because most of us fell, or, you know. But so both of y'all, the coach and the athlete, could have been like, yeah, you know what? maybe we do stick to long jumping. Like, that's okay. You didn't fall over there, so maybe we just go there. But also that Tom had to, like, every situation's different, right? How you coach high school at Yuma in the 90s would be different than how someone here in Champaign coaches track in the 2020s. You mentioned being on a dirt track. It's a desert already, so it's friggin' hot.
Yeah.
He at least realized, like, okay, well, these kids are coming out to work their tails off for me. I better make it fun. Like, there better be something enjoyable at the end of the day for these guys where they can go do something else, baseball, video games, whatever, you know? So I love that he realized that and then actually, you know, implemented that so much that you actually qualified for state, man. That had to be, I mean, did you, when you, whether it was the regionals or whatever, how they did it back then for Arizona, when you realized that you had qualified for state, like, did the memory of falling a race, or did it, like, kind of put it all in perspective of, like, oh my God, I barely finished a race the first time, and now here I am going to the state meet?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, truthfully, it's hard to remember. I remember the only thought that comes to mind was, you know, we were at a random, kind of a bigger invitational meet, and I three-stepped the whole race for the first time, and that was a few meets into it. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like from that moment on, it was like, you know, that learning curve I must have been taking advantage of. And then as you get towards the end of the season, I just remember thinking, every time I do well, I keep going again. So then, you know, and there's less and less of us, you know. And so it was, I think we were in the Desert Valley region in Arizona. And so we would race on, like, a Wednesday, I think it was, and we had kind of the preliminary rounds. And then if you placed so high, I think, you know, you would advance to the final, which was either Friday or Saturday. And then if you were top three, I think, then you would move on to the state championship. And so I just remember moving on, and I felt like I was clueless. Like, I was just racing.
Just racing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, that's my only memory. And then everyone was kind of like, you know, wow, you're going to the state championship. And I thought, well, don't we all do that? Or I don't know, you know. So it hadn't set in, I guess.
Yeah, that's actually kind of precious. Like, you know, some people, it's their own, you know, their eyes on the prize, and that's the only thing that matters, and they fall short, and their identity falls short. You know, they put their whole identity. You were just like, all right, coach lined me up, so I guess I better race.
Yeah. I guess it was kind of that football mentality. It was like, you know, you go out there and you run to win, and then you just move, you know, you advance, you know, and that's really all I remember. Next thing I knew, I was running a track meet at Arizona State, and I thought, oh, this is pretty big.
That's cool.
I did not make the final, though. I do remember that.
Okay. I was going to say, you're going to give me some Cinderella story.
Like, yeah, no.
or the exact opposite. You got to state and you fell again. I'm like, oh, son of a...
No, I didn't fall. Good. I do remember trying to implement some drill that I saw another guy doing. And I'll never forget just slicing the back of my lead leg on this hurdle. And of course, I had to play it off as if, you know, nothing happened. And I looked down, you know, I don't know, however long later. And it, I mean, it was probably a good, you know, 6-inch, just a scrape, purple. You know, it wasn't like I was hemorrhaging or anything, but I played it off. And I remember thinking, oh, no big deal, I'm fine. And man, it hurts so bad.
Well, take us back. You brought up the fact the first time you three-stepped. And, you know, the hurdles is a little different, especially the 110 hurdles, compared to a lot of other events that I can think of off the top of my head that, you know, we're always striving to get to a similar stride pattern, right? 8 to the first, 3 in between, 10 off or whatnot, depending on your ability, et cetera. But we usually start with 5-stepping, or maybe we 4-step if we can switch. But the first time you 3-step, it feels like flying. It's a little different, right? You get more air time, so it just feels different. Can you remember, like, the first time you ran the whole 110, everything? Like, was it like did you feel slow? Like, when you finished, did you, like, okay, I 3-step, but that felt slower than some of my other races?
You know, I swear I can remember the meet, and I remember the morning. I really wish I could remember where we were. I mean, I feel as if it was yesterday. I remember it was a preliminary, you know, it was kind of a big meet, but we ran the prelims, you know, kind of morning time, maybe, you know, I don't know, 11 a.m. or something. And I just remember it was quiet. And, you know, I remember taking each hurdle, and I got to the finish, and it just felt right. And I thought, oh, something went good. And then, Tom, you know, we called him Spanton, his last name. You know, he comes up and kind of high fives me, and I'm thinking, okay, that worked. Something was good, you know? And I remember it feeling fast, and like you described it really, really pretty perfectly. It felt like flying. Mm-hmm. It felt really effortless. And, you know, from that moment on, I never look back type of a mentality, I guess. And, man, I really wish I could remember where it was. I can see the other team's jerseys and everything. Yeah. Yeah, it just went really well. And obviously he was excited. And so that got me excited. So,
well, let's keep moving on, because I will not regale you with the story. So I was a hurdler. I was a really terrible hurdler. So I still remember the first time I five-stepped all the way through. I had to go from 7 down to 5. That's very special. Not many people go from 7 to 5. Usually everybody starts off with 5. I had to really work to do 5. I think the first time I did hurdles, I'm not kidding, I think I did a 20 stepper. I mean, I was just, I was setting it all up for that next. Now, knowing that your dad was a Marine, you already talked about a couple of places you moved. As someone who has some experience of being a military family, you probably moved, or I can assume maybe you've moved a lot. Because I was going to ask, how in the world do you get out to Northern Iowa? But it might have just been in your blood as far as, like, you know, moving and stuff like that. But tell me, why did you choose Northern Iowa? A great school. I mean, you talk about another amazing program that it feels a little bit like a slam if I say they overachieve, and I don't mean that in any bad way. I just mean they do a really, really good job there. How did you get to Northern Iowa, and what major were you looking at when you first got there?
Yeah, great question. You know, so really, you know, it's like, hey, I guess give credits. Like, thank God, you know, I joke that it was the best decision I ever made. And looking back, it was as if I, not to sound melodramatic or poetic, but it was as if something or someone was kind of just guiding me there.
Yeah.
Looking back, you know, my dad's from Iowa originally.
Okay.
And so we would visit family in Davenport quite a bit, you know, over the holidays and whatnot. And we were in Arizona, and I graduated high school in May, and my dad retired from the Marines like 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so we had intentions, if I remember, you know, our family, I was going to run at a JUCO up in Phoenix area, up at mm-hmm. Mesa Community College.
Yeah, recruited me. Lots of great JUCOs there in Arizona. At one time, we dropped a lot of them, but that was a hotbed for junior college track and field. Yeah,
right. And I wish I could remember the coach's name. I thought he was still there, but he was just a great coach, and I really wanted to go there. But honestly, I was just too chicken to leave home. And with mm-hmm. my dad trying to find work, you know, in that region in Arizona, maybe Southern California, where my mom's side is from, there a lot of things are just up in the air. And so they decided at kind of last minute, you know, my dad's side from Iowa, why don't we try Iowa? So they moved to Davenport, and I just kind of followed suit. I was, like I said, really just kind of too chicken to leave home and go out on my own. So I did my first 2 years at St. Ambrose University in Davenport, Iowa.
You're a B. I had no idea.
You're good.
Oh man, that's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was great. I had a great time there, a great experience there. And I had a great coach. I can see it. Ryan Sadler was the coach at the time, and really had a lot of fun. But I think at the time there was just something, you know, I joke with my student athletes that, you know, academics, I never did poorly, but, you know, track was my first love. And that was what I really wanted to push as hard as I possibly could. And I kind of had some random occurrences with people at Northern Iowa. I was at a track. In fact, one of my teammates at St. Ambrose, was high school teammates with, pole vaulter at the time, Jake Pauli you might know Jake.
Of course.
Yeah. We were at a meet at Iowa, and I'm running for St. Ambrose, and my teammate at Ambrose introduced me to Jake. And that was my first person I met at Northern Iowa. I had a cousin that she just attended Northern Iowa, and I got online one day and I thought, you know, hey, I think I want to try to run here. I think this would be a good fit for me. You know, right around that same time, my dad actually took a position back on the West Coast. So my parents were then going to move from Iowa back to California. So I decided to stay. So at that time I'd kind of grown, I guess, a little, and
yeah, as I say, a year ago, year behind, you would have gone to California again.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went up to Northern Iowa kind of on a whim, And really just kind of thank God it worked out. I wanted to major in, I was majoring in physical education at the time. And going from an NAIA to an NCAA, they were telling me we need progress towards a degree to be eligible. And they said, well, lucky for you, we have this new, it's called physical education non-teaching. So a nice way to insult you, I guess. You know, it's health and human performance here at Emporia State. Or exercise science. But in 2000, I guess that was kind of new. And I said, I have no intentions of being a physical education teacher. So that's perfect for me.
Right. So you're like, you wrote that. This for me. Perfect.
Right. I was like, this is a miracle, you know? So one of those little miracle stops along the way. And yeah. I thought, no, that's perfect. I really don't, you know, I don't want to be a PE teacher. I wanted to be a strength coach. And so I thought exercise science with a coaching minor would be perfect. And so I went with that. And, you know, thank God it really all just worked out.
Now let's explore this, because I think there's some value here for beginning coaches or probably more for beginning coaches here, but you just expressed kind of a big, I don't know if breakthrough might not be the right word here, but a big change in you. You had mentioned that, you know, I wasn't going to leave where my family was for school. Like, you know, we were going to stay in Arizona, so I was going to go to Mesa. We're moving to Iowa, Davenport. Okay, then I'm going to go to St. Ambrose. And now something happens in this 2 years of college, this first couple of years. Parents move. And like I said, I would have 100%, if I'd have said, hey, well, what is Steven's next step? Well, he's going to California then. That's just, that's his role, you know. What do you think changed and why? You know, we see a lot of, I don't use the word a lot. We see athletes who don't want to go to school 6 hours away, 16 hours away, because they want the comfort of home. And that's not judgment. Some people need that, and that is the right place for them. Some people, job-wise, don't want to move to another state, another region, et cetera, for many, many reasons. Again, I think a lot of that does have to be with comfort. You know where you are and who you're with and those kind of things. Right. Striking out on your own can definitely be scary. You know, for someone who moved a lot, you had to be the new kid in school a lot. So, you know, that's a different person and personality that can succeed in that. But what changed for you? What was it about college that when your parents were going to California, they probably also were like, oh, well, Steven's coming with us, we better start looking for a school. And you're like, you know, I'm gonna go to Northern Iowa. I'm okay here. I've kind of found my thing, you know, who I am, maybe. Can you expound on that at all?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I mean, I think looking back, you know, at that time and knowing, I guess, what I know now, you know, it really just kind of came down to that old cliche of, you know, focusing on one thing, whatever your priority is. And at that time, you know, my priority was track and field. Mm-hmm. You know, things were going well at St. Ambrose. You know, I'd done, you know, okay, I guess you could say, in the 110s and 400 hurdles. And so I felt like I just kind of had hit a point where I thought, you know, hey, I have so much opportunity here to push myself to run as fast as possible. And I want to take that opportunity, you know, whatever that may be. And so I wish I could say, you know, and I don't know, maybe the student athletes, maybe, I don't know if anyone hears this, you know, academics were not my priority. I kind of figured I would find a major, I would make it work. I would graduate, you know, but I felt like I needed to find the right environment, you know, to run fast. And so, you know, at the time, you know, the internet, this was probably 2000, you know, was still kind of in its infancy. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember looking at some results and thinking, hey, this would probably be a good fit for me. I had looked at Wisconsin lacrosse because of my high school coach. Mm-hmm. And so I think I just kind of grew into that point, and you touched on the, you know, yeah, I moved around a little bit. So at that time, I think maybe moving didn't really have much of a, mm-hmm. wasn't too much of a variable of a deterrent.
So. Yeah. I was going to wonder if being in college and you know, that sometimes is the first time a lot of us meet people from other places, right? We meet sometimes that's the first time we meet an international student. We meet people from California, Maine, North Dakota, et cetera. But being a military kid, you had to have, when you were in California, you had to meet people who were transferred there from Maryland and Alabama. I mean, so you, it wasn't like the first time you're meeting people from outside of your region. Yeah, I don't know. That's just interesting to me about that, about why now? Why after 2 years of college, like, okay, yeah, I'm this is going to sound terrible, Steve. The little bird's out of the nest. I can stay. It's okay.
Mom and dad, analogy, though.
And they go far, by the way. They go to California. They don't go to the next state over Illinois or anything. They go, but they go time zones for you.
Oh, no, I look back at that and I think, you know, I just, I was scared to death. You know, I guess, you know, I think I had a good childhood, you know, still have a good relationship with my folks. You know, so I don't know. Looking back, I really don't know what it was. Some sort of, you know, a failure to launch to some degree. You know, some student athletes that, you know, they can't get out fast enough. You know, and that works for them. You know, I was just more of a cautious learner, I guess you could say. And, but you're right. Once, you know, we joke around that once my parents left Iowa and I stayed, it was, you know, 1800 miles, whatever it is, apart, and months without seeing them, you know, so, right. But it's worked out.
Well, tell us about your time at Northern Iowa. You know, obviously amazing athletes have come through there, but also quite a few amazing coaches, you know, Bucky and Travis come to mind immediately, Steele. I mean, just so many great coaches and people have been there. As you're going through those last couple of years of your eligibility, it was still eyes on the prize of being a strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, you know, really, you know, probably my first, you know, you mentioned, I like how you put eyes on the prize. You know, my prize was really run a track, you know, kind of all along. But I thought academically I'd be a strength coach. You know, that was my inkling, I guess you could say, at the time. And so I was taking courses, you know, in sports science or in coaching. And then, of course, I get to Northern Iowa and there are tryouts, you know, and so I'm thinking, oh, well, how hard can it be? You know, I'd kind of had, you know, a relationship with Jake Pauli. And actually, the first guy that I met, I went into Bucky's office one day after I'd already registered for classes and everything. You know, I'm in the registration process and finding an apartment and everything. And Travis is sitting in there. And so the first official guy that I met was Travis. So met him. And, you know, kind of the rumors start to get going that, hey, you know, we've got to make some cuts this year. And I thought, you're kidding, you know? And you kind of take this for granted and track, there's really no cuts. you know, well, there were a lot of cuts this particular year. And I thought, this is a nightmare, you know, like if I don't make this team. And I remember there was a list that came out and it had kind of four categories, like, you know, practice gear, locker room access and weight room access. And, you know, maybe one other thing. And, you know, you either did or didn't have check marks next to your name. Well, whatever's next to my name, I didn't get access to anything. So I'd show up to practice and that's all I could do. And then I'd have to go back during the open rec hours to lift weights. And, you know, so that was what I would do. And it was cool because there was a strength coach who was a GA at the time. And he would always be in the office and I would ask him, well, what did track do today? And so finally he's like, hey, I'm just going to post it. You know, I'm just going to post it for you. And I was like, hey, thanks, dude. So he posted it.
Oh, we have a small blip here. We're going to have to get Steven to pick us back up from posting the workout from the GA. Hey, you blipped out there. Start back with the coach was posting the workout.
Okay. Yeah. So he posts the workout and I would do that at, you know, whatever time, seven o'clock at night, I guess it would be. And, after I'd graduated, Buck and Case, shared that they're like, yeah, man, you were cut from the team at one point. And, I thought, well, that's interesting. And I never knew that. And so really what happened was, and at first I thought they were joking, you know, right. I was like, yeah, right, whatever, you know, and they're like, no, really, you were cut. And I thought, but my name was on that list that day, you know, and really what happened was I had two teammates at the time that said, hey, we're going to go do hurdle drills at, you know, 2:30 and practice started at 3:30. And I thought, okay, you know, this is new territory for me. Like you go early and And I remember walking down from my girlfriend at the time, her dorm room, and I'm walking down to the outdoor track, and I didn't see anybody there. And I almost turned around and said, forget it. You know, these guys obviously didn't go or something. But something, you know, just another miracle moment pushed me down there. And I go down there and I start hurdling. And I'll never forget, Doug Case was helping Travis in the discus. And I remember he gave me a cue in my hurdling. So we start drilling, and it just worked. You know, he gave me this one cue and it really worked. And unbeknownst to me at the time, they told me this years after the fact that yeah, I was cut, but I came down one day and I did hurdle drills. And I guess Case was like, yeah, man, I called up to the office and said, take this dude off the list. He's a pretty good hurdler. And so my name was written in. And that's how I ended up making the team. So I almost didn't go.
Wow.
You know, and unfortunately, the two guys that invited me to do hurdle drills actually ended up getting cut. And I made the team thanks to them.
Dude.
So it was nutty looking back. So
I mean, Steve, that on top of some of these other stories so far, and we're still in undergrad, by the way.
Right.
I mean, it is. You kind of described it. It's almost like there was a hand on your back going, hey, it's time for you to go over here. Oh, hey, all right, it's time for you to go here. Even down to the point of like, hey, it's time to go do some hurdle drills.
Right.
That is amazing.
And that was the first time that we had done any of those drills, you know, all fall. I mean, had those guys not invited me, you know, I think everything in my life probably would have been different.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. That's quite amazing. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I can't wait to see those guys again and say, hey, man, so I thought y'all cut, Steve.
When they first told me, I was helping coach after I graduated, and we were eating dinner. And it was kind of one of those moments where you felt like you might have realized how close you came to, like, death.
Right.
You know, and you're kind of laughing off at first, and then you pause and you think, wait, really? Seriously? And they're like, no, you were cut, dude. We had to write your name in. I thought, wow, okay. I, you know, everything would have been different for me that day. So
that is quite amazing. It is one of the things, you know, typically we talk about, like, decisions that you have to make that seem, you know, now that we have perspective, we have, you know, 2020 hindsight here, that, you know, you could have gone to UNI, or you could have gone here, blah, blah, blah. Here's one that you didn't have a decision. You didn't have a decision to make. They made the decision of cutting you.
Yes.
And you had no idea.
I was.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. That cracks me up. Okay. Well, it's awesome. Well, here's the deal. You would not be on the Gil Connections podcast if it weren't for this.
Right. That's a good point.
Your life could be drastically different.
Very true. Yeah.
So where does track coaching come then? So you're still, you know, and luckily you're on the team. Luckily you went to drills, but you're still in your mind, you're like, yep, strength and conditioning coach, that's where I'm going to be. Where does it actually flip over to, like, oh, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to be in the weight room full time. I'm actually supposed to be on the track full time.
Oh gosh, boy, good question. You know, I feel like it was somewhere, you know, my fifth year of eligibility. You know, I remember being, I feel like I do have a memory of running at an outdoor meet in Arkansas, and it was a great day. It was great weather. You know, I ran well, I thought, at the time. And I feel like that was that moment where I thought, man, I really like track. I just don't want to let it go. You know, I go back to that was kind of that rite of passage, I guess, that eureka moment of, hey, I'm going to coach track. Yeah, that's probably, but it was kind of late in the game. I feel like that, you know, so maybe I might have been leaning toward track and field at that time. But, you know, I love strength and conditioning, and I had great strength and conditioning coaches up there. I think it was Coach Kramer. I think he's at North Dakota State now. And he really introduced me to the NSCA and taught me all the Olympic lifts. And I just loved it. I really felt like that impacted how well I ran on the track. And it was, you know, it was a big thing for me. So I was really in love with human performance in general, but I think just working with Buck and Case and Travis and just the environment that those guys created, we just had so much fun. And I thought, man, I would love to do this for other athletes.
So what was the first step after you get your undergrad there at Northern Iowa? Did you go on to be a grad assistant somewhere? Did you go straight into coaching? Did you go into strength and conditioning coaching? What was that first step for you?
Yeah, so that's another great question is, you know, at the time, you know, we had some volunteer assistants. You know, Jake Pauli was one of them. But it always just really been assumed or conveyed that, you know, you had to be invited back. And I've always, you know, I'm kind of laid back kind of guy. I thought, well, if they, you know, and in order to be invited back, you had to be really a top quality athlete. You know, Jake was national champion, things like that. And so I thought, well, maybe I'm just not good enough, you know, so to speak. I was an okay hurdler. And so lo and behold, I get done with my last race, University of Nebraska. We're at the regional championship. And Buck comes up to me and we're in the indoor, the football area. And he says, you know, hey, what are you doing next year? Kind of a thing. And I thought, I'm just going to do this internship down in Davenport that summer. I was going to graduate, do an internship, and then go back to California and then pursue a master's degree. So I just kind of thought I'd find a local JUCO and just start coaching,
right?
You know, do whatever. and so I said, yeah, I'd love to come back and help coach. Had no idea what I would do for a job or where I was going to live or anything.
Yeah.
But I just said, yeah, I'll come back. And you know, and that's really how I got into track coaching. So
what, yeah. Well, a lot of people could say that about Bucky. Yeah. Well, so what did that look like? I mean, it's interesting the way you just described that of like, I had no idea where I was going to live, what it would look like. That actually reminds me a lot of when a kid goes pro out of college for track and field specifically. It's like, oh, okay, well, I got to figure out where I'm going to live because I don't have a scholarship anymore and I got to pay for this and time for practice. Like the whole world, we sometimes don't realize how easy, how lucky we have it as a track athlete on a team. You know, schedules are made for you, travels booked for you. I mean, you massage if you're at that kind of school and athletic trainers, and then you go pro and it's like, oh, I've got to figure all that stuff out now with a agent and hopefully a coach, etc. Here you kind of on that same front on the going professional and coaching, it's like, cool, all right, so where am I gonna live? I gotta figure out how I gotta get paid now.
Right.
How did that all, I mean, that's not the easiest thing in the world. How did you manage all that?
Yeah, boy, that's I've never heard it. You know, that analogy that you make is pretty darn accurate, you know. And I think, again, and now that you asked the question, I've never really thought about it. I think at the time, you know, it really came down to, you know, obsession is probably a negative word. But that was my priority, you know. My priority was track and field. And so when Buck asked, there was no doubt in my mind that I was just going to say yes. And that I would make the rest work, you know. And my parents were a little disappointed because they're in California, and they were kind of like, "Well, we thought you were coming, you know, coming home." And and I wanted to live in California. That was my dream, I guess, you know. But you know, I just basically said yes on the spot, and you know, and Buck had told me, you know, he said, "Hey, we don't have any graduate assistants, but a volunteer is a good way to get your foot in the door, build a resume." And I said that was really all I needed to hear. So I just kind of figured I'd find a place to live and I'd find a job. Lo and behold, Travis came back to Northern Iowa, Travis Geffert. And he says, "Hey, dude, why don't you live in my basement?" I was like, yeah, okay. And Travis and I were roommates for a little while in undergrad. And so so I thought, okay, you know, and Travis had just got married. So he was kind of a newlywed. And I knew his wife and I thought, is this okay? You know, like,
did you ask permission, Trevor?
Yeah, like, you better ask little Nikki, you know. And I've known, you know, his wife, you know, previously, and so I thought, okay, that's not strange or anything, but he says, no, this would be great. You know, we've got this finished basement, you know, and we'll charge you cheap rent. So I did that, and I lived with him, and then I was kind of actually, I remember being kind of lost at the time. I worked at GNC in the evenings. That was the only real job I could find. And I was still trying to train. I really wanted to keep training and see if I could run in the 13s and kind of get to that, maybe the B standard of the trials or US champs or something like that. So that was kind of my ulterior motive, was I wanted to keep running the 110s. And, you know, so we trained for a while, and there was a group of kind of post-collegiate guys that we would kind of work out around the same time. But after that first basically semester, I really just decided, hey, I'll stick around here and pursue my master's degree. And so I kind of had, I guess, a gap year in there. Mm-hmm. But it was great. It was a great learning experience. It was huge. So I kept coaching for 2 more years while I got my master's. So 3 total.
How did your mentality change? You know, when you're an athlete, we actually, you know, speaking of, you know, now knowing you're in Kansas, we had a really good conversation with Cameron Babb, a friend of yours up in Washburn, about the difference between being an athlete and being a coach, and kind of what we parceled out as we were talking it out on the podcast was, you know, being an athlete is a very selfish thing, and it has to be. That's not a, you know, to your point about some words that are typically bad words, right? Selfish is always like a bad word. Well, it's not, right? That as an athlete, the coach is telling you cues or workouts, and selfishly you're trying to take those in and how can I get better? I'm the athlete. So how do I use those cues? Right. And as a coach, it's reversed, it's changed. Now you're trying to get information. So whether it's from coaching education or other coaches, you're listening to Doug and Travis and those guys coach. And now you're trying to synthesize that information so that you can push it out towards coaches. And that's a change. That's a change in thought process, change in motivation, change in what excites you. You know, you were excited about yourself running PRs. Now you have to change of like, well, that's out the door. Now my excitement has to come from the athletes hitting PRs and achieving success. How did that mentality did you change that mentality for yourself of, okay, I'm in coaching mode now. It's not about me and my athleticism. I can't run the races anymore. They have to do it. So how do I help? And how did you leverage? You had some really great, I mean, they were really good coaches there, but they were kind of in their, I don't want to say they were in their infancy, but you know, they have certainly grown and coached many, many,
right.
You know, many, many records and performances, et cetera, as they've continued in your career. So you had some really great mentors, if you will, for coaching there. How did you start picking their brain or at all? Or were you still just like, all right, I'll put hurdles wherever you tell me to, or you know, how did that process work for you?
Well, I think, you know, kind of, again, you know, I like your comment of someone was constantly nudging me from behind. You know, what was really unique, I think, about that time at Northern Iowa was, you know, you had that a key ingredient of internal intrinsic drive. You know, there were, you know, people like Joey Woody, who was helping coach, but he was still running. I think I know he was still running, you know, at the elite level. Dave Paulson, who had qualified for the Olympic trials that in 2004. So he was kind of doing the same thing I was doing. We had Burke Bachman, who was also doing the same thing I was doing. And so, and then of course, Travis was still competing and he was on staff full time, you know, so we all kind of had this world. And then of course you had Jacob Pauli and his wife, Nikki at the time, was still competing. I mean, I could keep, there were even a few more, athletes. So we really had this kind of cohort, I guess, you know, and it helped because we had good guidance. I think Buck and Case and just their, again, that environment that they created was just super driven. You know, so you were obsessed with, you know, who could come up with the best workout, you know, and then you had, a lot of us started our master's degree in exercise science. So we had this hyper obsession trying to learn from, you know, trying to see what Doug was doing on the track. And then how does that relate what we're learning in class? And so we would kind of toggle back and forth between some sports science and physiology and then kind of the art of coaching with what Buck and Case were doing. And so it really allowed us this kind of lab setting and then a practical setting.
Yeah.
And so it really became pretty, pretty fun, you know? I mean, yeah, we would, we had, Eric Hannenberger at the time, he's up at South Dakota now. He came in, I think a year after we started and we spent a lot of time together, studying and analyzing. And I think right in that time frame, you started to learn, you know, that your energy goes into the athletes. Mm-hmm. And it isn't about what we do on the track. You know, so I think that that same competitive fuel that we had as athletes, it started to trickle into the coaching realm. We wanted to become the best at that.
I get this vision, like with computer science majors. So, you know, people who are writing code, a lot of times they'll do, you know, they'll shove 10 to 12 in a room and they'll code for 12 hours. I mean, they're just bouncing off of each other, bouncing ideas off of each other. I kind of get that same vision for you guys, that you have this consortium of people, I don't say undergrads, but young people that are starting to learn how to coach. They've come off good careers. They're taking exercise science. And then you have these, you know, gurus, if you will, the Buckies, Doug and Travis. Yep. And again, they're so, you know, especially Travis is so young in that guruship there. I'll definitely give him guruship now, but maybe not then. But like this idea of, I love that vision of, you know, you'd go to the track and see what Doug was doing for the day. And then I kind of got this vision, like you'd all go back into a huddle and be like, all right, well, in class today, we talked about, and I did not take those classes, so I can't even make up the words and things like that. Well, oh, I see what Doug was doing. Coach was doing this, and he was trying to get this adaptation. I wonder why he didn't utilize this, though. Like, it's just interesting. Like, I feel like you maybe were able to pack several years of coaching and coaching education into a couple of years, because it was accelerated because of the people you had with you and the mentorship you had on the coaching side as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, man, you're good. You know, like, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head about the huddling. I mean, to the point where we had a joke, we would call them a vortex, you know, kind of similar to, you know, a tornado, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. Like, so if we just had the two of us talking training, that was like, you know, just two of us. Then the next thing you know, we'd pull somebody else in, and then we'd pull somebody else in. Mm-hmm. And we literally did what you described. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember sitting with Doug and looking over his shoulder and asking questions and trying not to be disrespectful of like I was questioning him, you know, but I thought, well, why do you put that there? What makes you put that there? And, you know, and then we're also trying to figure out, okay, well, we learned about, you know, anaerobic glycolysis in class, and you know, how do Doug's workouts match what the textbook is saying? And you know, and so we spent a lot of time. You know, I look back and I think, man, we were like losers.
No, I was gonna say lucky. You said losers. Yeah, lucky.
I look back and I'm like, man, we spent hours doing this sort of thing. Yeah. And I'm thinking, boy, we really had no life. you know, but we loved it at the time. And you know, so yeah, we were just, again, that word obsessed probably comes to mind. Mm-hmm, and being able to look at what Case and Buck would do and study, you know, everything that they did, and then try to relate it back to, you know, to the training and how the two meshed, you know, it was really fun. I mean, we probably overanalyzed it quite a bit, but it was cool. It really worked out awesome in the end.
Yeah, it seems like a great example of just immersion of just in a little bit to that point of the best of both worlds. Some people get a great lesson and learn the art of coaching, and so other people go down a different path and they get the science part of it and they get, you know, fully immersed that way. This seems like a very unique, like when you said vortex, I actually thought of like two colors coming together, you know, that make a different color. And it's like, oh, here's the art. Here's what you're learning. And I'm not saying Doug is an all art guy by any chance, but I'm saying, you know, what Doug was doing on the track is art. So here's that Doug side of it. And then here's the textbook side of exercise physiology. And they're both just wrapping together to create this different experience. That's really unique. I don't hear that very much amongst coaches in their journeys.
No, that was really, you know, we look back and think that was kind of maybe unique, or, you know, it's at least to Northern Iowa. And we felt like that was something special that we could get maybe only there. I mean, I'm sure you can get it other places, but, you know, Doug was very much, you know, he was an art guy. He understood, I think, the science and the intricacies, but, you know, but he was very much kind of your player's coach. And I think he could read his athletes exceptionally well. And, you know, so he just knew what to apply. It was like a chess game that I felt like he was playing. Mm. And so I really grew to kind of respect what he was doing. Meanwhile, we were immersed in the data and the science and, you know, so again, yeah, blending those two worlds was pretty cool.
Well, shout out to Doug Case, because he is one of the guys that I think is because he is very kind of reserved. You know, he doesn't get talked about a lot, but when you look at what his athletes are doing there. It's like, I mean, something's going on. Not just right, but like continually right. I mean, you know, there's always fast times coming out of his group. So I'm just always amazed at, and just, you know, maybe he's just not on social media. Maybe that's why he doesn't get a lot of pub or something. I don't know, but he deserves.
He's a pretty laid back guy.
He deserves it all. Well, let's keep moving for the sake of time. Did you go, where did you go after you got your, you're working on your master's degree, you get that. Where do you go after that?
So try and think, so my next stop was Santa Barbara City College.
But you did go to California.
Yeah, I did. That was, you know, like, I guess my ultimate coaching dream, you know, the junior college level was something that I wasn't, you know, I guess super excited to do. But it was coaching. I was being paid, not a lot. In fact, hardly anything. But I was being paid to coach collegiate track in California. And that was kind of my first end goal, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And so I was ecstatic and went out to Santa Barbara, and it was a dream. My wife and I that was our first year coaching together. In fact, she got me the job.
Did you meet her at Northern Iowa?
We met at Northern Iowa. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, see, Northern Iowa. That's why you didn't go to California when the parents moved out there. Aaron was waiting for you in Northern Iowa. That's,
you
so
got
cool.
It right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Awesome. So you, is she from Iowa?
Her parents are from Iowa. In fact, her dad, so my father-in-law, he also ran track at Northern Iowa back in the 70s. And she was born in Iowa, but she graduated high school in Kansas City, Prairieville, Shawnee Mission East.
So you drag her all the way to California.
More or less. I kind of nudged her. The timing wasn't quite ideal. You know, she finished her undergraduate. I was still in my first year, I think, of graduate school. So I had another year to go. Hmm. And so she went to University of California at Santa Barbara for, I think, a year. She wanted to do environmental sciences. And I remember her talking to me or emailing me or something at the time and saying, you know, hey, I live like 3 miles from this track, and I was working out and I saw the team, and I kind of missed coaching, and I thought about asking them if I could help coach. And I said, yeah, go for it. Do it. So she did that. And I think they ended up putting her on a small stipend, and she coached pole vault there and loved it and got to know the head coach. So that's fall time. So I finished, I think it was that year. I'm forgetting the years, but I came out for spring break to visit her, and I ran unattached at a track meet at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and mm-hmm. met the head coach, you know, and he was a great guy, you know, and he's just like, hey, man, if you want a job, I'll hire you. And I thought, I'll take it. So
at Cal Poly SLO?
This was at Santa Barbara City.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
The meet was at Cal Poly SLO.
Oh, yeah. Got it. Okay. Yeah. That would have been Mark Conover.
Yeah. So the coach at Santa Barbara City was a guy by the name of Keith Kephart.
Right. Yeah.
And so I came out and trained for a week at Santa Barbara City and met Keith.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And then I rode along with the team on the bus up to the meet at Cal Poly SLO. I ran unattached in the 110s. And so I got to know him. And, you know, he was like, hey, man, if you want a job, you know, let me know. And I thought, yeah, I do. I'm letting you know right now.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just cut to the chase, man. Right now. Yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
I didn't even ask salary or anything.
Right. The guy's like, well, it was going to be 10. Now it's 5 because you're too eager.
Right.
Well, so, you know, you had or still have a pretty big passion about coaching in California. And there are a lot of people that would share that vision and yes. desire. How long did you stay out there and what happened?
So I was only there for a year. And I loved it. You know, like I said, my wife and I were coaching together. Mm-hmm. Keith was awesome to work with. You know, he was just a good mentor. But he had told me that when I got the position, you know, that I think she still coaches maybe at Moore Park College. And, so that's about an hour south, and he was commuting. And so he'd given me fair warning and said, hey, you know, I might do this a year or two, and if I take off, you know, I'll recommend you to be the next head coach. And so I thought, hey, I'm going to take this, you know, this is great. I really had, you know, no, I didn't mind if I was head coach or not. I just wanted to coach. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward. So he had kind of given his notice, I guess. And they were kind of in this search process. And the way that the California Community College does it, at least at the time, was kind of unique. There's a teaching assignment along with it. Mm-hmm. And so lots of things were kind of up in the air. And I just kind of felt like, hey, I should maybe just see what else is out there just in case, you know, something happens. They bring in a new head coach and he doesn't want me there. Mm-hmm. So I had applied for a job in Canton, Missouri at Culver Stockton College.
Oh yeah.
And they were crazy enough to hire me. And so I went from Santa Barbara to small town Missouri.
Yeah.
So yeah, they offered me that position and I took it. So.
So you're all in on coaching. Like this is the career.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So Culver Stockton, NAIA, yes. Mm-hmm. So you're mm-hmm. learning, you know, you were NAIA at St. Ambrose, you go to Division One, you go to community college out in California, which is a unique system. You mentioned about, you know, like you have to have a master's degree to be a head coach because there's always a teaching assignment. I'm pretty sure that's with all community colleges out in the California side. And then now you go to Missouri. I don't want to say dragging Aaron along, your wife, but you know, she is in tow, right? Yeah, yeah. These are family decisions now at this point. It's not just you going wherever you want to go,
right?
And go to Culver Stockton. How long are you there and how was that?
It was great. It was just 2 years. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just really interesting. You know, Aaron and I actually were not married at the time. In fact, we weren't even engaged. And you know, I look back and think, thank God she followed me. You know, because she came to Culver and was my volunteer assistant, you know, so she worked with the pole vault and the high jump, you know, and she do, you know, she drive the van or whatever else that I needed. And she just took a position. Aaron actually has quite an interesting scenario story is, you know, she took a position at a para as a para. So she would commute about 30 miles north and was a para for basically a year, school year.
I'm sorry, para.
She was like a paraprofessional, like a teacher's aide.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. So she did that for a junior high class. And then she would drive down and coach pole vault with me. And so we did that basically for a couple years. She ended up getting put on full time in our second year. And so we were able to focus more on coaching. But yeah, we went to Culver and it was awesome. I mean, it was 2 years of, you know, it was challenging at the time. But I just wanted something that was my own and I could kind of do it my way, so to speak. And had great 2 years there before I came to Emporia.
My favorite question to ask someone when their first head coaching gig, now that you can look back on it, were you ready? Were you ready to be a head coach?
You know, I'd like to think I was.
We all do. And then we get in the chair.
And Culver was a great place to learn. You know, sure. It was going through a transitional time. I think the college was as a whole. Mm. And it was a startup program, you know, so I got to watch basically the track be built and all the purchasing of the equipment and things like that. And looking back at some of that, I think, you know, maybe no, I wasn't ready at the time. You know, I think recruiting wise and day-to-day operations, having learned at Northern Iowa, I felt pretty confident in that regard, but just some of the bigger, you know, decisions or conversations, you know, I felt like I was maybe a little green, but it was a great place to kind of break yourself in and kind of cut your teeth, I guess you could say. So it really prepared me well those 2 years, and Culver was great, tiny little town of Canton, but we loved it there. It was a great town.
Yeah. It's one thing to think you know all the aspects. It's another to actually be the person who's making those decisions, especially for someone you're still at this point, you're at infancy of your coaching career. I mean, you've got a couple years at Northern Iowa, you got a year in California. I mean, you are still a pup as it relates to the profession of coaching track and field. And here you are now, you're in the big boy chair, so to speak, where all decisions come to you. So maybe it was that unique aspect of where that program was that helped out with that. Because I mean, can you imagine yourself, think back to where you were at that point when you first started Culver, and now as the head coach of Emporia, could you imagine being the head coach of Emporia at that point, at that 27? Like,
oh yeah, couldn't have done that.
Right. A lot different decisions, a lot different importance of decision, like repercussions. Like, oh man, yes. I make this decision. If I make the wrong one, this affects people.
Yeah. Just the magnitude.
Right. Exactly. So you go from Culver to Emporia?
Yes.
Yep. As an assistant coach.
Correct. Yeah. For 2 years.
And Aaron comes with.
Yep.
And you're still dating or you're married?
So we're engaged at the time.
Okay. All right. We're going to do a part two and have Aaron come on and give her side of all that. Because I don't like getting Aaron's story through you because I like to hear from the person. But we may have to get the other side and be like, Aaron, so he tells us what's going through your mind.
Yeah. It was challenging at times.
So you go to Emporia. Now, I have to ask, I don't want to assume – it doesn't appear that you knew of a Culver Stockton before you applied and interviewed and all that. Did you know about Emporia and any history tradition before you applied and accepted the position there at Emporia?
So I really didn't know a whole lot about it. I mean, I'd heard of it. And the funny thing is I heard nothing but good things, very brief comments, right. You know, just through coaching conversations, that it's a great spot and that the head coach was a great guy. He was a real hard charger of a head coach and, but a good place. Other than that, I couldn't have picked it out on a map. No idea, you know, mm-hmm. and really through my time as a graduate coach at Northern Iowa, there was a graduate assistant at Wichita State. And so, his name was John David Harris. So that was my former boss's son. And,
that's right.
Yeah. So there was the connection mm-hmm. and, you know, you just kind of, I guess you see the Cross Country Coaches Association, you know, the Track and Field Association, you see the kind of postings and, you know, he and I were the same age. He had taken a position, I think at Alabama, Birmingham, maybe, or something. But then I knew, you know, we kept in touch. So I knew he was in Emporia working with his dad. And I kind of thought that was neat, you know, that he would take over for his dad someday. And mm-hmm. I came across a posting that Emporia State was looking for a coach. And so I reached out to him kind of twofold. You know, I was inquiring about the position, but I really was kind of curious as to where he was going. And I thought, wow, he's not taking over for his dad. He must have got something, you know, great or something. Right. But, you know, he was just getting out of coaching. And he said, hey, you know, I've just had, you know, some life changes and things like that. And so my dad's looking for an assistant. Would you be interested? And I said, yes, I would. So yeah.
So why go from... Yeah, there's a lot of reasons we can assume going from NAIA Division II, but you're also going from head coach to assistant coach. Why this change? Why not continue at Culver Stockton running your own program?
Looking at it from a young coaching position or perspective, I guess I was thinking, you know, it's a move up, maybe, so to speak, or at least diagonal. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, I can go to the NCAA Division II. I think at the time my aspirations were still to be a D1, you know, type coach. Emporia State would be a nice stepping stone to that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My wife's from Kansas City. So obviously we do a little homework, we find out, hey, it's 90 minutes maybe from Kansas City. Right. So lots of perks. But that thought had gone through my mind. In fact, Dave asked me that very question. And I really just felt like there were a lot of things I was doing at Culver that I felt were correct. But maybe I wasn't certain. Mm-hmm. And I kind of welcomed the opportunity to have an opportunity to learn from somebody that's kind of done it for a while.
Yeah. That's what I wondered when I asked that question about, were you ready at Culver? Cause I was like, there's no way you haven't had a Dave Harris type of person to mentor you in that side of things of like, hey, I'm going to have you do scheduling. Here's how I've done it. Get you that experience. You just don't have you didn't have any experience in having that mentor. And that's why I was like, man, I can't imagine taking over a program and just everything's new to you. You know, right. You've never thought about scheduling and budgeting and travel and recruiting and et cetera, you know? So that's just interesting. And I like that you kind of had that mind share of like, okay, well, let's go learn from a Dave Harris. Like maybe that's what'll lead me to Division I or whatever you thought might be the next steps at that point in your life.
Right.
So you're at Emporia. How many years have you been in Emporia? So from that year to now, how many years have you been at Emporia?
Let's see. So that was August of 2009.
Okay.
So what is that? 12, 13?
12, 13. Yeah. And how many years now have you been the head coach?
So Dave left. He took a position at University of Nebraska in August of 2011.
Yeah.
So that was when I was promoted up. So 2011 till now.
So, I was going to say, wait, that had been a while. So you were only at Emporia for 2 years and you get the job.
Yeah.
Were you ready this time?
No. Of course, at the time, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready.
That was a much more definitive answer than what I asked about Culver.
Well, when you know, you're mostly because you're feeling Dave's shoes, you know, and then you realize within about 45 seconds that you're not going to fill the shoes.
Right.
So the quicker that I realized that was not going to happen, you know, that then I felt more. I took a big leap, I guess you could say.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. You don't fill shoes. You wear your own. And
yes.
And those shoes are marked by people like a Dave in your life and mentoring you and things like that. But they're still your shoes. They're not his. For sure.
Precisely.
So tell us about the experience of being, you know, being at one place for 10 plus years and starting as an assistant, now the head coach. And just tell us a little bit about your experience there as the coach at Emporia.
Yeah, it's been a great experience, of course. You know, I mean, we love it here. You know, and it's been good. This has probably been the most, I guess, personal learning, personal growth, whatever, how we want to call that. You know, because you go through a lot of different stages, you know. So now I feel like I'm kind of figuring out and learning that, you know, that now you're in that 40 something age bracket. You've got some kids. You know, priorities tend to shift a little bit. But you know, when we first started, you know, and I say we, my wife and I, you know, and when, you know, it was just coaching, you know, all coaching all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it still very much is, you know, but we fell in love with the community, love the mission at Emporia State. You know, you're really coaching, you know, you feel like you're in the trenches, working with the athletes. Sorry, my phone's ringing. I apologize for that.
Oh, good. No, good.
You know, you're definitely, you feel like you can get down there and kind of get to the nitty gritty, I guess you could say, of coaching. You've got lots of different athletes of varying capabilities. You've got some that are very talented, others that are much more developmental. You know, so you've got to get real creative, as a coach. But it's been great. You know, it's a phenomenal spot. You know, had a few opportunities to maybe move on, but there's just something about this place that really I just keep feeling like there's unfinished business, I guess you could say. And we just really enjoy being here. So we feel like we've got some roots, which in the coaching profession it's a tricky thing, you know.
Not many run deep.
Right. And so we're to this position where, you know, hey, we're here, you know, and this is where we want to be. Will we end up here, you know, forever? I have no idea. You know, we try to, you know, we want to plan, but we try to live in the now and make the most of, you know, at you and I, we, you know, we always would say, you know, hey, the big time is where you're at. And so we try to really focus on being successful and being big time here, and let the future kind of take care of itself.
Yeah, you're a coach, not a fortune teller. Absolutely.
Exactly.
That's right. Well,
you got it.
And the art of coaching, it never changes, meaning there's always something. We try to plan our schedules out as a track coach as much as possible, but things still, priorities change on a daily basis. And so Steve here has some a prior engagement that has come up since we booked this. So we're going to start wrapping up here a little bit, Steve, for you to get. But I had three kind of topics that kind of come up and that I'd like to maybe just do some more rapid fire answers. And then I'll cut you loose and you can go back to doing the day job.
No, you're
that
good.
You got there.
You got plenty of time. You're okay.
You know, we mentioned Emporia State, and you know, culture is a really hard thing to build and design. And there's sometimes part of culture happens without us being intentional at all. There's just some happenstance things that occur. So like one of the examples I would have is like Steve Prefontaine, you know, that Prefontaine was this good looking guy that died early, and was a distance runner that all played in that Phil Knight and Bill Bowerman were together and created Nike. Those are things that you couldn't have planned at Eugene, Oregon to become Tracktown USA. Like you could have said, yeah, we're gonna make this Tracktown USA, and you know how we're gonna do it? We're gonna have a really good distance runner that's gonna die early, right? So he becomes a lore. No, we're gonna start this mega billion company. Like, it just those happened, right? One of the things at Emporia that I'm sure some happenstance come in, maybe some intentionality, is Emporia State is really, I'm going to say, famous for producing graduate assistants who become full-time track coaches. Like, it's almost, I know Cameron and I had a good joke about it because he GA'd at Emporia as well. Yep. But there are so many GAs that seemingly come through Emporia State. Can you tell us about, is that intentional? What goes on there? What's in the water, if you will, as a GA program for track coaches in Emporia?
Yeah. Good thinking there. I mean, it's, you know, I think, you know, the MIAA conference, of course, is really good. You know, it's successful. You know, and I wish I could find a way, you know, I don't want to say it's a regional thing or a conference thing, but I think you find people that you know, they want to get into coaching, and this region makes it accessible, I think, to some degree. So you kind of have ingredients. Now, whatever you want to do with those ingredients, I guess, is up to you, you know. So right. It's you know, it's not a New York or a Boston where, you know, hey, if you want to coach part-time or be a GA, but, you know, your rent might be a little pricey, so you're going to need to do lots of things. You know, here it's a small town, you know, so it's a little more affordable. You know, I've noticed throughout my years, you know, you find an assistant coach that was an athlete within the league. They move into a GA position. Maybe they get married or whatnot, and they stay within the region. And so you can do that. You know, you can be a newlywed type of couple, or even single and on one or two incomes or a small income. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can really get your feet wet. And I think then allows permanence. You know, they, like, some of the coaches in our league have been around for quite a while, and they're very successful. And I think that there's consistency there. And so I think that's something that, going back to Emporia State specifically, you know, we just kind of capture that. You know, students want to come here. Maybe they're athletes within the region. It's affordable living. You know, Emporia State's a good school, you know, so you have all these ingredients. And then if you get somebody in here that's really passionate, you know, one thing we try to do, I think Dave did this and I do the same, is we try to give the GAs autonomy and let them know, hey, you're in charge of this area. You have to recruit it. You have to develop it. And then we need you to do these tasks, you know, so there isn't an instance where, you know, you're just kind of there, you know, you're going to write the workouts, you know, you're going to do those types of things.
So that's cool. Really
try to prepare them.
Yeah. I like that. Thank you for that. Another topic that very specific to you, in knowing that we don't talk about X's and O's here on this podcast, but I'm curious, you brought up strength and conditioning and some of the mentors and people that fed into you on the strength and conditioning side. And as that relates to track, I'm always curious, there seems to be a, I don't know if it's tug of war, but there are track coaches who say, yeah, I give my track team to the strength and conditioning coach and I step out. I don't say anything. Others would say, I give it to the strength and conditioning coach, but I'm in there every day, or I'm helping write the workouts with the strength and conditioning coach. And then maybe there's another camp that says, oh, no, I'm the track coach. I am also the strength and conditioning coach. Where do you see strength and conditioning as a coaching profession and activity as it relates to track and field? What's maybe how you do it, or what is the ideal way that, if you had magic wand, how you would do it? What do you think in regards to strength and conditioning coaching for track coaching?
You know, I think as a track and field coach, you know, you either have to have somebody that is an extension of you to some degree, or you got to do it. How does heavy lifting or Olympic weightlifting or jump squats versus heavy squats versus, you know, whatever, you know, how does that impact speed or jumping ability? You know, we mentioned Travis, you know, and they've got a strength and conditioning coach at Arkansas by the name of Matt Clark. And Matt was an athlete at Northern Iowa. So he really learned from a similar school. And so Travis can trust Matt, and they work very cohesively. And I think that's something pretty, I don't know if it's rare, but it's special. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess I'm not sure exactly which camp, you know, I mean, definitely not the type of coach that's going to turn them over and just say, see ya. You know, I'm going to want to have an influence there. Right now, you know, I write, you know, for our sprinters and such, you know, I write that lifting, and, I'm constantly trying new things. But you know, when you do go back to what, you know, the foundational things that we learned in the science, that, yeah, you know, that maximal strength is important. And so we tend to start there, you know, and how you develop that along the way, is an important thing. And I think that as a track coach, you know, I want to have some severe oversight, or at least observation of what is the cause and effect here? You know, if we implement this type of training, how does it impact the athlete? You know, so I still love it. I still love being in the weight room. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm pretty active in that regard. So.
What advice would you give? There are some programs where the track coach has no say. It is literally here's your lifting time for your track kids. You have no input on this, track coach. I'm the professional. And there are certainly professionals in the strength and conditioning world, just like there are professionals in the track and field coaching world. And there are certainly, I'll use the word ego strength and conditioning coaches, just like, yeah. Sorry, boys and girls, there are ego track coaches as well. They know it all, right?
Just a few. Yeah.
So what advice might you give for someone who's, you know, had passion and experience as a strength and conditioning coach as it relates to track and field, and obviously as a track and field coach, for someone who comes into the program and it is, I don't get to say anything. Our kids have to be in the weight room at X time, and maybe I'm allowed in there, but I'm certainly not allowed to say, hey, you know, today we're doing this on the track. Maybe we should do something similar to this in the weight room or what have you. What advice might you have for those coaches? Putting you on the spot here. Yeah, I realize what I'm doing here. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. You know, I think right off the bat, you know, I've slowly acquired that most things in life, fortunately or unfortunately, tend to come down to a little bit of a power struggle. Mm. And as a coach, you know, you want to do the best that you can. And this is what I would do is, you know, to try to build the relationship, you know, of, you know, and I would hope that any strength and conditioning coach would also understand that, you know, hey, we want to be strong, but they're going to work in cohesion with the event coach, because, you know, the track and field coach, that's the guy that's on the line. If the athletes don't perform, or the placing at the conference or the national level or what have you, you know, that's the coach that's on the line. So I think if I'm a strength coach, I would hope that I'm going to be as dedicated to helping that coach as possible. Or, you know, what is my role? Be respectful of that. Cause it is difficult. You know, when you have, you know, you have some athletes, you know, you think back to the old Bo Jackson analogy, you know, that he allegedly hardly ever lifted weights, but he was super strong. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have those athletes, you know? So at the end of the day, what is it that you're trying to do? If you're trying to get the athlete to pole vault higher or to sprint faster, you know, what is your role to getting that athlete to that destination? Maybe your role is to back off, you know, and to guide them, you know, more of a management style. Then there are other athletes that, you know, they're not very talented and they really need to be developed from the ground up. And, you know, so working in cohesion, but understanding that a strength and conditioning coach, I would hope, would think, hey, it's my job as a strength coach to help enhance the track and field coach. And then through that dialogue, you work together. You know, to understand that. And it's not always easy. You know, I mean, I've seen plenty of times where, you know, the strength coach wants to do one thing and, you know, you got a really talented high jumper, you know, and they're not going to fare well with heavy quarter squats or what have you. But I think if you have a good dynamic and you have that good relationship and each coach is willing to some degree to maybe check their ego down or portray a picture of this is what we want to do, please avoid these things, but be respectful of one another's approaches or philosophies. I think hopefully that helps.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what we've tried to do in different times.
So. Yeah. I hear the word communication, having a communication with that coach. And yeah, that's great. Thank you for that. Again, I know I put you on the spot on that one, but it was just as you're talking about strength and conditioning, I was like, oh, well, that's a topic that comes up a lot.
Yeah,
okay. That's hard. All right, Steve, we're on our anchor leg here. Wrap us up here.
Yeah,
something
fine.
That is super cool that Emporia State has done and will do here in the future is you're hosting NCAA championships, man. That's a big deal. First of all, that says a ton about your facility. I mean, there ain't not every facility has what you need to host an NCAA championship. So right. It says a lot about your facilities, says a lot about your structure. Again, you can have a facility, but if you don't have the people inside your athletic department in the city, it's a big task to what you're doing. Tell us a little bit about hosting NCAAs coming up here in the next couple of years, and how excited, how nervous you are. Yeah. and what goes into that a little bit here.
All of the above, like I said, we've really fallen in love with this town, the community, and I know the community is excited, yeah. And I think that, I had the opportunity to work on the sport committee a number of years ago, and you really just kind of get an insider's look, at hosting, but also at the unique perspective of hosting from a Division II track and field coach's standpoint, So is it going to be a destination? I don't know too many people that are going to want a vacation in Emporia, Kansas, although it is a nice town, but I think what the philosophy we want to try to take is make it a good championship, what makes a great championship is, really how the athletes perform, hopefully, and they're going to walk away feeling great about what they did. So we really, that's kind of our ground driving philosophy is, the town is very accessible. There's not going to be a lot of traffic. Lots of things are going to be within walking distance, so we can really cater to a relaxed hometown feel. So I think the community is definitely on board with that. From a facility standpoint, we're getting some upgrades, which is going to be great in our throws area. The track's going to get, a facelift as well, as well as a few other things, so selfishly, we're excited about that, that's always a plus.
Yeah.
and administratively, at the university, they're excited, this is what we need. This is a big balance between economics as well as athletics and how the two mesh together. It's a reality whether, people like it or not. And so, we look at it as an honor to host. And that was my perspective was, this is a privilege and we're going to make the most of the privilege and make sure that we host well. And people think, hey, this tiny little town, is might be one of the best kept secrets around. Yeah. Hopefully it goes great.
And it's outdoors in 24 and 26.
Six.
Okay. I thought there was, yeah. I wanted to say 25, yeah. But I was like, I was pretty sure there was a year gap in there. Oh, that's so awesome, man. I'm excited for you guys. As the NCAA equipment provider, we've gone to, the Grand Valley, Pitt State, course, Oregon, and we'll be in Austin this year for Division I and Rochester for Division III, Virginia Beach for Division II indoors. Have you been out to that place yet?
Or those? No, haven't been there. Just seen, lots of pictures.
Gorgeous. Yeah, it's gorgeous. And we'll be in Pueblo for outdoors this year. So super excited to see, every place has a little bit different flavor, if you will. I've done this now for, I don't know how many years, and include some USA championships that I've been a part of as well. I've been to every place around here. No one's ever been bad. Whatever you think is a bad place is not. They all have their own unique flavor and experiences. And so I'm excited for when I saw the list come out, I was like, oh man, Emporia, that's great. I'll be able to find a GA to come work at Gil from there. That was my first thought. I was like, I'll start sniping from the GA program. Absolutely, man. Well, we're excited for you guys. We still have another year, but I love that, I've been talking with some of our teammates who's, in charge of the championships as relates to our side of it. I love when a facility is working a year and 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's the year of, and it's like, oh man, you're a little behind.
We feel like we're behind right now, but it's coming together.
But you guys are doing an excellent job. And, for any Division II coaches listening, you're going to have an amazing experience out in Emporia. We got to get through this year first, because you're also going to have a great experience in Virginia Beach and Pueblo, which I personally did those site visits, and they're going to be awesome. It's going to be a great competition. And I'm always amazed, it becomes this like comparison of Division I to Division II to Division III, etc. But man, Division II coaches, y'all can coach your butts off, man. I was watching that meet last year at Grand Valley, and I was just like, holy, I'm so glad I got out of coaching. I could not coach at the level that you guys do. I'd be embarrassed. I'd be out of this thing if I was still in it. So super proud of what you guys do, and super proud of what you do there in Emporia, Steve. It's interesting to see how Emporia has continued to evolve and continue to improve. And I think what you do there with your staff is just excellent work. And honestly, at the end of the day, you're affecting young people in many, many positive ways. And that at the end of the day is what you hang your hat on, because 99.9% of these kids aren't going pro. There's not very many pro spots out there. So the kids that you are impacting are going to become moms and dads and bankers and business owners and store clerks, etc. I mean, they're just going to go on and do amazing things, and teachers, and they're going to have great experiences and great reach into society because of what you and your staff do. So man, just so excited for what you guys are doing in the rest of this year for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your guys' help.
Oh, always, man. We love you guys. We love the Hornets, man. Yeah. So thanks for being here today, man. Again, I know you're super busy. You got to run.
You're gonna run. Appreciate
you. You're listening. You got to run. We're going to do it again. It's March 13th. So it's actually, is this right after Nationals? I got to mix up my dates of travel. Yeah. So you already know how Division II at Virginia Beach went as you're listening to this. I'm going to be that fortune teller. He can't. He's a coach. He can't fortune tell, but I can because it's my show. It has been an amazing championships. I just know it because Division II rocks. Division I is in Albuquerque. I bet that was awesome. Division III is in Crossplex, my home track, because I'm from Alabama. So I miss it. I'm going to go to Virginia Beach instead, though. So we're excited as the equipment provider for all the NCAA championships. And again, Stephen, thank you for your time today, man. Just so grateful for you, man. Really am.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. Join us next week and we'll do it all over again.
Thanks.